One of the girls started to giggle, Francine, whom Alice was always worried about. She had given birth to 3 children by the time she was 18, before her parents arranged for a hysterectomy. She wasn't pretty, not nearly as attractive as Bernice, but she had been an easy mark for dozens of men who bought her something pretty or paid her way to the movies. She lived at a boarding house approved for outside work trainees by the Warren State Home and was permitted out in the evenings to come to the center. 2 times she hadn't shown up, picked up by men on the way to school, and now she was allowed out only with an escort.
"He talks like a big shot now," she giggled.
"All right," said Alice, breaking in sharply. "Class dismissed. I'll see you all tomorrow night at 6.
When they were gone, I could see by the way she was slamming her own things into her closet that she was angry.
"I'm sorry," I said. "I was going to wait for you downstairs, and then I got curious about the old classroom, my alma mater. I just wanted to look through the window, and before I knew what I was doing, I came in. What's bothering you?"
"Nothing. Nothing's bothering me."
"Come on, your anger is all out of proportion to what's happened. Something's on your mind." She slammed down a book she was holding.
"All right. You want to know? You're different. You've changed, and I'm not talking about your IQ. It's your attitude toward people. You're not the same kind of human being. Oh, come on now. Don't interrupt me."
The real anger in her voice pushed me back.
"I mean it. There was something in you before, I don't know, a warmth, an openness, a kindness that made everyone like you and like to have you around. Now, with all your intelligence and knowledge, there are differences that..."
I couldn't let myself listen.
"What did you expect? Did you think I'd remain a docile pup, wagging my tail and licking the foot that kicks me? Sure, all this has changed me, and the way I think about myself. I no longer have to take the kind of crap that people have been handing me all my life."
"People haven't been bad to you.
What do you know about it?
Listen, the best of them have been smug and patronizing, using me to make themselves superior and secure in their own limitations. Anyone can feel intelligent beside a moron." After I said it, I knew she was going to take it the wrong way.
"You put me in that category, too, I suppose."
"Don't be absurd. You know damned well I..."
"Of course, in a sense, I guess you're right. Next to you, I am rather dull-witted. Nowadays, every time we see each other, after I leave you, I go home with the miserable feeling that I'm slow and dense about everything. I review things I've said and come up with all the bright and witty things I should have said, and I feel like kicking myself because I didn't mention them when we were together."
"That's a common experience."
"I find myself wanting to impress you in a way I never thought about doing before. But being with you has undermined my self-confidence. I question my motives now about everything I do."
I tried to get her off the subject, but she kept coming back to it.
"Look, I didn't come here to argue with you," I finally said. "Will you let me take you home? I need someone to talk to."
"So do I.
But these days I can't talk to you. All I can do is listen and nod my head and pretend I understand all about cultural variance and neo-Boolean mathematics and post-symbolic logic, and I feel more and more stupid. And when you leave the apartment, I have to stare in the mirror and scream at myself, 'No, you're not growing duller every day. You're not losing your intelligence. You're not getting senile and dull-witted. It's Charlie exploding forward so quickly that it makes it appear as if you're slipping backwards.' I say that to myself, Charlie, but whenever we meet and you tell me something and look at me in that impatient way, I know you're laughing. And when you explain things to me and I can't remember them, you think it's because I'm not interested and don't want to take the trouble. But you don't know how I torture myself when you're gone. You don't know the books I've struggled over, the lectures I've sat in on at Beekman. And yet, whenever I talk about something, I see how impatient you are, as if it were all childish. I wanted you to be intelligent. I wanted to help you and share with you. And now you've shut me out of your life."
As I listened to what she was saying, the enormity of it dawned on me.
I had been so absorbed in myself and what was happening to me that I never thought about what was happening to her.